With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yeah. Make sure you have some banter.
It's Wednesday, which means it's time for the front three with me, Adam Boltwood, the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Good evening.
And of course, the Stat King, Dave O'Brien.
Hello!
Another fantastic night in the Champions League. We're going to be giving you all of our reaction to tonight's games and yesterday night's games. Of course, a little Europa League preview, the big match coming up, Borussia Dortmund versus Liverpool. And I'm delighted to say we've got Tancredi Palmieri, BeIN Sports correspondent, Italian journalist on the show to talk about Antonio Conte to Chelsea, whether it's the right move, Stamford Bridge Club. First up, though, Champions League reaction, the big match tonight, PSG 2, Manchester City 2. A great result for Manchester City, a brilliant game in Paris. Manuel Pellegrini's team will be happy with that result, taking it back to the Etihad, of course.
Yeah, they look really good. I was really impressed with their shape off the ball. I feel like having like someone like Navas playing right midfield gives you a lot defensively, and then you've got the midfield that's actually pretty decent together, Fernando and Fernandinho. You know, take Yaya Toure out of that situation, you have a pretty functional midfield, one holder, one sort of box-to-box playmaker. I thought Fernandinho was so good in the game. I thought, you know, his work rate, his ability to sort of join in into the attack was superb, and he took his goal really, really well. You know, jump at his stats, he made 12 tackles in the game, which is pretty incredible. That's at like Casemiro levels of craziness. But it was just a really good performance. And I thought Fernando as well obviously made the massive mistake for the goal. But apart from that, I thought he was quite good in the game. Obviously nicked the ball for City's opener in central midfield, a really good turnover. So I think it was a pretty decent balanced performance from Manchester City. And if they hadn't sort of made the tiny mistakes, you know, the Fernando one and potentially the penalty as well, both pretty individual mistakes, they could have been far more comfortable for them.
It was that goal was a classic FIFA goal that Zlatan scored there. Who do you think was to blame for that one? Because I saw some suggestions that, you know, it was Joe Hart's fault for not sort of getting back in position earlier.
Both weren't great. I mean, he was sloppy when he received the ball, but also, you know, a professional footballer sort of looks at the space around their other players. Both of them were at fault, really. I mean, to say that someone needs to give you a shout when you've got a man like that, you sort of think, yes,
but
at the same time, you should know the space around you, you know. And didn't Zlatan do like a little Q&A earlier today when someone said in the Q&A, will you pile yet more misery onto Joe Hart? And you sort of think, I think he said something like, we'll see. And every time someone says we'll see, then you sort of feel like what they mean is, yeah, I know.
He didn't actually have a great game, did he, Zlatan? I mean, obviously missing that chance where he was through clear on goal, skying out over the bar, and obviously the penalty. Joe Hart, for once, actually saving a penalty when he tries those sort of mind games, pulls the faces, and, you know, looks a bit cocky, actually managed to save.
Is that a mind game? All right, yeah.
You know, chewing gum with your mouth open, that's...
yeah, that's really off-putting.
I imagine Zlatan's like, oh my God, that's so rude. I mean, it worked, so it must be a mind game. But we talk about that error there, Dave. We talk about Fernando's error. But there were a lot of errors from both teams. I mean, it wasn't exactly a defensive masterclass. And there was four of the most expensive defenders in the world. And you couldn't tell, could you?
No, it was crazy. Have a look back next time you watch the replay of the Fernandinho goal, I think it is. Have a look at where David Luiz is positioned in the move. It's ridiculous. He's like just sat on the edge of the area, then he just slowly trots back, and Aurier has to cover, and at centre-back makes an absolute mess of it. And obviously Fernandinho hits a deflective shot and it goes in. But what the hell was he doing for that goal? The Kevin De Bruyne one, he was like... It was like he was dancing. He sort of was caught the wrong way. Then he tried to turn himself back the other way. And he was completely out of position. Obviously, De Bruyne put the ball into the back of net. Really good finish. And then later on in the half, where he nearly dislocated his ankle by being in. Again, his body shape was atrocious.
And he's just the one who starts for Brazil.
What else have they got then? You know what I mean? Crazy.
He also... He's now the proud holder of the record for the quickest booking in Champions League history.
David Luiz has picked
up a yellow card after 12 seconds.
Oh,
yeah.
12?
12
Jeez.
Seconds is what I read officially.
Wow.
Which is, I mean, it's very impressive in a way. Dave, you talk about that about Serge Aurier. I saw suggestions on Twitter that Laurent Blanc needs to go on Periscope and completely chew out Serge Aurier, get his own back. Yeah, and on most of the team as well. Alex Groom, at Groomy, great username, has tweeted in saying, KDB is God. Hearts in the eyes face. Discuss. What do you reckon, Dave? Is he God? Is he the Almighty?
Is he the Almighty?
You'd say he is the Almighty, the creme de la creme of counter-attacking football, which is quite sad that Pep Guardiola's going to get his hands on him. But although KDB wasn't fit today, he was brilliant. On that counter-attack, that break, the space he moved into for the goal was excellent. I love the way that he drifts wide, you know, crosses the ball, creates chances. He's just he's the perfect player for any side to build your team around. So if Pep can come in and take him to the next level, boom, Manchester City are going to go far.
Two-all then, as I said, Lawrence, is a great result. I think according to UEFA, when the score in the first leg is 2-2 in the Champions League, the away team goes through 80% of the time.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic result for City. It gives them a really good chance of going through and a chance that not many people gave them going into this game.
Yeah, yeah. Although that 20% is normally the percent that sort of strikes when City are involved. They are playing the mercurial talents of PSG, and with both sides sort of having so many problem-prone players or mistake-prone players and so many huge talents, we see tonight how quickly a game can change. And I think both of them have sort of shown, you know, however much investment, those sort of things, they've both got something, obviously, that they can value, but they've not spent necessarily in a way which makes them formidable sides. And I think they're both going through the process at the moment. So we'll see. Second leg, I mean, it's all up for grabs. At 2-2, you still wouldn't put it beyond the likes of Zlatan and those guys. Obviously, with Zlatan in the last season there, but then Manuel also looking at his last season.
Mm. Farhan on Twitter tweeting in, Dave, at Enzo. He said the Qataris' five-year plan for PSG, this is the final year where they're expected to win the UCL bye. It doesn't look great going into that second leg, of course, but it's still, you know, it's still open game. They could still maybe fulfil that plan that's been put in place by their owners.
Does that mean that they have to sack themselves?
No.
Technically,
well,
they failed on their five-year plan.
Doesn't that just mean you quit? I think when you sack yourself,
just
Dave,
give
you
up.
Just quit. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he'll be the one sacked, if anyone.
He'll be
carrying the cap.
I think with that, they've still got a chance in this game, obviously. Two goals, obviously, it's a big advantage for Manchester City. But if PSG can nick the first goal, momentum may swing. City may start to crumble. We've seen them crumble a number of times. But I don't know, I said it on TFR on Monday that I keep thinking that this City time side is going to be... I've just got a feeling they're going to get to the final this year. It just seems like they don't, you know, they'll be done in the league if they, you know, they've got to focus on the Champions League, really. The league, yeah, coming fourth is coming fourth, but it doesn't matter for Pellegrini. It doesn't matter for some of these players because they'll be leaving Manchester City next season. Yeah. So the big trophy that everyone's got their eye on is this Champions League, and it just kind of works out for me. What PSG have also sort of got to get, probably, Di Maria was coming a little bit too deep for me in the second half. When they brought on Lucas Moura, their shape just completely broke down. They had Cavani and Zlatan up front with sort of Moura up there with them, and then Di Maria too deep. I think Di Maria needs to be wide in those situations, crossing the ball, not from deep areas, but getting to the byline and pulling it back or whipping a ball in after beating his man. So I think that tactically a few things they could definitely do. Matuidi's going to be a big miss in the second leg, because he's, you know, his energy is absolutely brilliant in this PSG side. So it's going to be interesting. It's definitely not done.
David Luiz also missing, I believe, for that second leg. Not sure whether that's an advantage or disadvantage based on tonight's still on. Yeah. Danny Z tweeting in saying, how much money would you spend for David Luiz? Certainly not 50 million.
Half that.
How much is it? Half that.
Yeah.
Is it 25? Still seems
high. I think 50 is so excessive for a player. Mm. They basically had to pay it because it was another, you know, billion-dollar club. That was the only reason they paid it.
Yeah.
I think that you could throw in potentially a tenner a chocolate bar, half a sweet potato, and a packet of peanuts, and then you probably get it right.
I do it. German Chica said, "Who is the better defender, Dave or David Luiz?" Dave, I think, based on.
I think Dave's got better pace.
Dave or Rock O'Brien.
Dave's positioning. I definitely think Dave's positioning would be better. You know, we were saying this the other day. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who are very good at football. Like, technically, they're absolutely fantastic. And all the football freestylers who sort of go, and I'm not having a go at them, but they sort of go, we could have made it. You know, we were technically blah, blah, blah. I was this, I was that. And you sort of go, yeah, but that's not the point. Like, the point is that you have to last 90 minutes and be as good. And, like, your brain still has to work in that time, you know?
Yeah, the mental aspect of the concentration. Mm. The understanding of the game and the perception of it in your mind is all about the positioning, isn't it?
Yeah.
All about how you interpret the game.
That's exactly how I felt when I went with Liverpool to Old Trafford just a few weeks ago. It was a cold, it was such a hateful environment towards Liverpool, and rightly so. You know, you can't resent that as a football player. But there are certain players then that sort of that rise to the occasion, and then there are certain players who you know, maybe the noise gets to them or any of those kind of things, and. Or, you know, it's not just about winning at one time. I think for some people at the moment, there's a very short-termism. And that short-termism seems to strike Real Madrid time and time again.
Mm. Of course, the other game tonight was Wolfsburg beat Real Madrid. 2-0 to Wolfsburg, that one finished, Dave. First ever UEFA Champions League quarterfinals. It's now 5 wins out of 5 at home in the Champions League. A very impressive performance and campaign from the German team.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we spoke about their campaign before, and how that, you know, they destroyed United twice with their defensive masterclass, quick transition, and nice and neat football. But you know, interesting in this game, Ronaldo scored what inside 4 minutes that was disallowed. I think it was. It was borderline. It was just offside. But you know, if that decision had gone the other way, the game would have been completely different. What you'd say about Real Madrid, though? You know, look at the goals. Obviously, I was watching the Man City game tonight, so I've only seen the brief highlights, but. The Real Madrid forwards, again, were not tracking back, and it was so frustrating because the Clásico, they nailed it. They absolutely killed it. They made that bank of five. They were compact. They counter-attacked well. And it's just like, you know, what do you need to do to these Real Madrid players? Can they only be motivated when they're playing the likes of Bayern Munich, the likes of Barcelona, the likes of Atletico Madrid? Or is that it? You know, it seems like they just can't get themselves up in the bigger games, and it's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
A bit of complacency there. I mean... David Shanahan, 9:30 on Twitter, writes in saying, did Wolfsburg win because they're excellent or because Madrid were poor? Was Zidane out-tacticked? Which is definitely a word.
It is.
Lawrence, did you manage to catch this one, or have you seen any highlights? Have you got any thoughts?
I've seen the goals, but what I have heard is that basically, like Dave says, it didn't look particularly impressive from the Real Madrid forwards and their overall the formation. I think I saw Skorka tweet out Danilo's game, and it was all just about zeros for him. So almost a lack of effectiveness, I think, for those players. 0 tackles, 1, 0 aerials, 1, 0 interceptions, 0 blocks, 0 take-ons. What score called? A shocker. I think it's along the lines of the fact that players didn't necessarily perform within what Zidane had laid out for them. But I also feel like that's almost like a bit of surface analysis you've got to dig a little bit deeper on, because... You know, the whole point is to negate the other team. And just because a player sort of has low numbers, which is true, he's had a shock of that reason, it also may be that he was shut down by Wolfsburg in a particularly effective way. And there's, you know, they're 2-0 down. They've not got an away goal at that point. That could be difficult for them in the tie. If they don't go back home and score first.
Edvin Maher tweets in, Dave, and he says... Can Real Madrid turn this around? As Lawrence says there, it's a difficult position, although they are going back to the second leg at the Santiago Bernabeu, which is obviously somewhat of an advantage.
Yeah, definitely. But I think they can, obviously, the firepower they've got in that side. But again, it's the work. You know, Wolfsburg will outwork you. And if you're not up for it and you don't want to work harder than them, then you'll lose the game, you know. But it's going to be a big contest. They've got to score the early goal and really look defensively sound. We saw Sergio Ramos at the weekend completely lose his head. He can't do that at all. But there is goals. Gareth Bale's looking like sort of bang on form again. So the highlights are just coming in live now. Gareth Bale whipped in a cracking ball from the left, and Benzema missed another chance. So it wasn't like Real Madrid didn't have the chances. So I feel like it's bang open, and Real Madrid could easily get back into this tie.
I think My prediction was Wolfsburg to go through, so I'm very happy. And I think it's nice to see an upset in a way.
But as you say, counting your chickens now, I mean, that's always healthy.
No, like I said, I think Madrid has got every chance of bringing this back. And, you know, I think that any complacency they had will have been shaken off after that result. They'll know what they have to do going into that second leg. And we all know the quality of Real Madrid. So it'd be interesting to see if they get back into it.
Did Wolfsburg tweet out the picture?
They did. So if you've seen the famous, now infamous picture from after El Clasico, where the picture was published of Real Madrid celebrating in the dressing room and Ronaldo's there tensing just in his underwear, the Wolfsburg Twitter a nice Photoshop of that, Photoshopping in their mascot into those celebrations, which is a nice touch. Top points for social media there, Wolfsburg. Hopefully they'll go through just for that. Did you manage to see Marcello's dive from the game?
Yeah, again, just going on the highlights reel there, that was pathetic. So he kicked out, out on Max Arnold, like sort of a back heel thing. It's sort of Max Arnold just kept following me, turned around, went into headbutt him, and then went down. So Marcelo like sort of caught him on the way back up, and then just fell over. Pathetic.
Good man.
Tomfoolery.
I think he deserved an Oscar, personally. The previous night, the big game, Barcelona versus Atletico Madrid. 2-1 to Barcelona in the end, Dave. It looked a bit shaky at first. Atletico Madrid were playing very well. Obviously scored through Fernando Torres, but it was hero to villain, wasn't it? As he was sent off not long later. But Atletico Madrid players coming out tonight and yesterday sort of complaining about how UEFA protects Barca, sort of hinting at some sort of mass conspiracy. Would you go along with that? It seemed pretty stupid of Torres' actions there to get that second
year. I don't know. I think it was pretty much it deserved a red card. You know, two of the tackles were very, very silly. It sort of mirrored Sergio Ramos in the Clásico. But I think there's a stat today saying that Barcelona have had the most players sent off against them in Champions League history. But again, Atletico started really well. It was very similar to their league game in January, where again they took the early lead and then they lost, and then they up the league games a little bit different. They did concede two and then lost a man. But in this one, obviously, they lost a man, then conceded goal. But I really liked how they set up again with Fernando Torres up front. It was an interesting selection. They played Ferrasco up top with Griezmann in the last game, worked very well. But I feel that Atletico in the last few weeks have missed that sort of target man or just a striker to play up there who's good in the air, because they do cross the ball a lot. I thought Koke in the first half was so good. The through ball for the goal was excellent. But the way that he was cleaning up, you know, Gabri was holding and he was playing sort of as a central midfielder in front of him, and he was just cleaning up so well, you know, winning the ball, distributing it. But then that Barcelona, you know, they did kind of switch it on and they hit that sort of, was it 60 minutes? They started to really, really go at them, really pile that pressure on. And Suarez did take his goals very, very well. But I was a little bit upset in a way, because again, they had the momentum, they had the game, and they a stupid red card.
What about Luis Suarez, Lawrence? Because there was a lot of controversy about whether maybe he should have been given a red card in the third half.
After
kicking out a Juan Fran, kicking out.
I think in both instances, I actually think obviously referee. This is the problem, right? It can apply to the situation immediately. So they go, well, you know, both one player should have been sent off, the other should have been sent off. I do feel one of the cards was a little bit harsh on Torres. Especially considering the stage that we're at in the competition. I think Dave's right, you know, that both of them can qualify as that. I think you probably say the same about Suarez. There's still that hint for Suarez that there's always a little bit of danger with him. And I think if he loses that, then that's probably going to take away from other elements of his game. But I think that's kind of the point with Suarez and with Barcelona, is they almost need to protect themselves, and they create this mystique around themselves, which I think gets to the other team and definitely gets to teams like Madrid, who need to attack them with that high sort of intensity. I think for the second leg, they're just making people aware of what they're trying to do. And, you know, for a very long time, Barcelona have sort of ideologically owned Europe, with sort of being like, no, we play beautiful football, you need to protect that. But it seems to be changing a little bit now, that, you know, with the appreciation of people like Simeone and other high intensity managers who are also very charismatic and seem to be able to extol the virtues of playing in that way, we're seeing it's less just about playing that kind of football. And obviously we're seeing the nasty side to Barcelona as well. So, you know, it's not as if they're these kind of angels who glide through Europe whilst everyone else tries to sort of take them down.
It's a dangerous scoreline for Barcelona, Dave. Of course, after that red card, they were sort of on top for most of the game, sort of pouring forward. Atletico had every man behind the ball for the majority of the second half, and it always looked like Barcelona were going to get their goals. But 2-1 is not exactly the most convincing scoreline, especially when Atletico get the away goal. Who's your money on in that second leg?
No, for me, I think it's definitely going to be Barcelona. I feel like losing Torres, I mentioned before how I feel Atletico do lack a target man, lack a striker this season, especially being a goal down. That's quite a lot to ask for. And we know what this Barcelona team can do. You know, Rio Ferdinand did a great interview with Gerard Piqué and was sort of talking about what the difference was between Pep's Barcelona and this and Luis Enrique's Barcelona. And what he was saying was that this Barcelona team can play the possession football, can drain the life out of the opposition, but they can also sit deep and they all can also counter-attack with pace. And that's something that they didn't have under Guardiola. It was too much like Louis van Gaal's Manchester United. The transition comes and the ball comes back. So he's just saying that the team's evolved even more. So you think about those two dangerous weapons there. One, they've got the advantage, so they can just keep the ball circulating. And two, they've got the pace on the counter-attack. So for me, it's kind of game over, and they're happy to defend. Another really interesting thing Piqué did say was they're now happy to defend on the penalty area. You know, that had never happened with Pep. He wouldn't be happy for that. You know, he'd want the ball back, but they're just happy to defend. And now they've sort of become a better defensive unit in a way where Busquets has become even more of a hub. Piqué's in great form this season. Alves looks pretty decent going defensively as well. Mascherano's obviously in there, and Jordi Alba. So they look a lot better. You know, their unit looks a lot better. But we've seen in recent weeks as well, the forwards not working back again. It makes me so angry. Neymar, do some bloody running.
Yeah, it's interesting. Dave, you've said that quite a lot recently, but there is that sense that maybe they have almost abandoned that sort of collective defensive unit. But what I thought was interesting yesterday about the game, Lawrence, was that Barcelona did really struggle to sort of break Atletico down before that red card. I thought the failed MSN looked quite fatigued. They didn't look like they were on the top of their game, struggling to sort of passes to come off, shots to come off. I think that's the worry for Barcelona, that going into this sort of crucial stretch of the season in free competitions, that they're so reliant upon that front three. If they're not firing on all cylinders, that's where problems start to creep in.
I think maybe it would be tempting to say that consistently, but I do think that there are other really key players for them within that Barcelona side who are going to help them break it down more. And basically, if you keep pressing with those guys and that shape and the movement, especially of Suarez, then in the end, you're going to end up breaking them down whether those players look tired or not, I think. And actually, I think it's more, like Dave was saying, they've really adapted the system and found more from it than essentially changing it and making it into something completely different. Pep's got his own ideas, and I think they've definitely moved away from those towards a more pragmatic style of football. But I still think, like, you know, even if those three aren't from the front, do you guys think at all, though, that I'm trying to work out the way to put it, really, because you know, they're massively prolific and they are incredible, which means a lot of goals don't come from other people on the pitch. But it's not as if those other players don't have the capability of scoring those goals. It's just that it's very rare that we almost need to see that. So, you know, why underestimate those guys just because these other guys are shining so bright?
I don't underestimate them. As you say, they obviously fulfill certain roles. But especially last night from watching it, it seemed a lot of the play was going through Messi. He's kind of the centre point of everything. And he was struggling at first. He, you know, the passes were off. He was getting tackled easy. And we saw the same thing in El Clasico. And when that, even though the other players are obviously incredible players, they're massively capable, when him as the central figure and Neymar and Suarez just behind him, when they aren't firing, it just seems it's not quite functioning as well as it could. And especially, as Dave says, if they're not contributing to the defensive play as well.
I think that's a big thing as well. You know, Messi's been too deep and too narrow lately. He needs to go out and just stand on the touchline for a bit and pull people out, because that's the brilliant thing about Messi. Wherever he goes, he's going to draw people. So if you want what Enrique sort of done, playing Suarez through the middle, Suarez obviously can take a number of defenders because his movement's excellent. But having Messi in a wide position near the touchline will stretch the defence and open up space in the middle for the likes of Iniesta, for the likes of Rakitic, for the likes of Neymar, if he wants to drift inside, to pick up that space there and it'd be a bit freer. What we're seeing now is Messi coming inside, but him pulling all these players in, which is just getting, there's too many bodies in the middle. I really think that Enrique needs to, obviously Messi's an enigma and he's going to be difficult to communicate that to, but you need to stay wide, open the space up. We've said too many times, we'll see Rakitic pulling the overlap. Yes, Rakitic can do that, but it's just too congested in the middle. And sometimes when you play this possession style, you need to go wide to open people up. And then the quick switch is on. And that's where you score the goals. Dominate down one side, bang, centre midfield, bang other side. There'll be an overlap. There'll be a man over. There'll be a free man. And I feel that this Barcelona team needs a tiny bit more to win this Champions League again. They need to click again. It doesn't feel like they've clicked yet. And we're in April.
It's going to be fascinating to see who goes through. I think my pick would be Barcelona, as Dave sort of said himself there. I mean, Lawrence, would you be confident in Luis Enrique's team going through?
Yeah, I think so. I think just because of the way that the legs are oriented as well, it probably makes sense for those guys. Mm. I would really like to tip Atletico for this. Because the narrative makes sense. I think we can see where football's going right now. And as much as I love that Barcelona team, I also really like this Atletico side. I felt a bit sorry for Torres when he got sent off. Because you just sort of, I don't know, I have sympathy for all
those
guys.
He made his bed.
He did, he made his bed, mate.
Then you say the same about Florentino Perez. And then, you imagine Rafa smiling very smugly somewhere tonight. I would have played it different. You can see where football's going.
Not that smuggled with Newcastle probably getting relegated, but
you're definitely showing signs of the fact that they are playing. I mean, there are huge signs of what is better about that Newcastle team. And what would have maybe been better would have been the tactical reading of Rafa Benitez of a German side. It does show the tactical superiority, but the trend at the moment that the Bundesliga has in being able to pick other sides off. I hope that just doesn't move on to Thursday as well.
The final quarterfinal, before we get on to Thursday, the final Champions League quarterfinal was Bayern Munich versus Benfica. 1-0 to Bayern Munich, it ended. Vidal scoring in the second minute. Failed to really build on that, didn't they, Dave, after that? Benfica, very well-organised team, and Bayern Munich, despite the early goal, couldn't really get any more goals to sort of put them in a more commanding position.
Yeah, it was a very interesting game. Obviously, Xabi Alonso didn't start for starters. Obviously, all three of us were gutted. Didn't know what was going on. Was Pep drinking last night? But no, I think Benfica were good again. They did operate a little bit differently. I've said that teams that do well against Bayern this season, they do press them in phases high up the pitch. Benfica, like you mentioned, did sit quite deep. But Arturo Vidal was the best player on the park. Scored a goal, won two aerial duels. Got three shots on goal, four clearances and six tackles. That's a pretty decent defensive midfield position. But it's going to be interesting because this Benfica team, as I've been saying, are a good side. They've got Mitroglou up front. They've got Jonas. They're two players that can create, that can cause problems. So I do feel this tie is maybe not over.
No, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I think we saw Pep Guardiola before the game saying Benfica had the best defence in Europe, which, although maybe a little bit generous, is definitely not outside the realms of possibility. I mean, they did constrict Bayern Munich, and they seemed a little bit lethargic, Pep Guardiola's team. And again, a 1-0 lead going into an away tie is not an exactly a commanding position. You think Benfica can cause an upset, Lance? Potentially.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I think Dave said that for quite some time with this Benfica side, hasn't he? And, maybe we were wondering that when they all came back from the international break together on... this is quite a thick set of games at the moment. You've got the international break and then you've got another league game, then you go pretty much straight into the Champions League. So I do think that's a lot for those players to take in a very short space of time. I don't necessarily think we manage this part of the season best, but I suppose that is, again, supposedly part of the challenge. But then you are asking footballers really to just put their bodies maybe just a step where they don't need to. You could just make the season a little bit longer.
That is a little bit of Champions League reaction then to those fascinating first legs of the quarterfinals. Another first leg of a quarterfinal coming up tomorrow night, Lawrence. Borussia Dortmund versus Liverpool, potentially the biggest game of the season for the Reds. Jurgen Klopp returning to his former club.
Yeah,
feeling confident going into this one?
Feeling like if you portray Liverpool as the underdogs, then and they believe it, then that's great. But I think Liverpool before saw themselves as underdogs who were able to achieve. I think the reason Liverpool are underdogs in this one is because actually, Dortmund are actually just a much, much superior side, who are far, far ahead of Liverpool and where they are in their curve. So it's not as if it's like the plucky underdogs of Liverpool going against this Dortmund side. It's actually the tactical, you know, basically the underdogs, because they're not as good a side. And most people, there's a difference between underdogs who are meant to win and underdogs who are just meant to kind of lay back and take it. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting tactical watch to see if, because, you know, it's kind of like the master and the pupil with Tuchel and Tuchel and Klopp. And also, you know, the way that Klopp built that club up essentially within Europe and did so much with them. That's what's going to be the interesting side, is what's Klopp going to do against a system which isn't actually not his anymore, and has been shown to sort of move on a lot from a lot of what he tried to implement with that side. You know, he's basically playing a bit of a stranger now, and that's going to be more interesting to see.
Obviously, Dortmund, they brushed aside Spurs 5-1 over the course of two legs, albeit with a much changed Spurs side. You expect Liverpool to go with a much stronger team, but they sort of have to stay in this first leg, don't they? They can't let it get away.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Because going back to Anfield next week, that's where they could have a chance.
Yeah, but and you've also seen the front three of Dortmund combine so well on the counter-attack this season, Aubameyang, Marco Reus and Mkhitaryan. So it's dangerous if they do go down a goal in either leg and then they push on, that would be very, very dangerous. I kind of feel that Thomas Tuchel might go with a back five. We saw it against Bayern Munich. I really feel that he likes that when he's playing against a team that presses, so he can play out the back. I probably mentioned it about 75,000 times, but I feel that's how he's going to set up and then playing the, you know, the likes of Mkhitaryan and Aubameyang up front. It's interesting to see where Gundogan's going to be back, because he's got a, I think it's an ankle knock. He's been out for 5 games. So apparently he's back in training with Matt Hummels, who had flu at the weekend. So there's two big players there that if in their side, there'll be a big difference. We saw how good Hummels was against Bayern Munich in De Clasica. Really bossed Thomas Muller, destroyed him mentally. So if Tuchel wanted to go with that and get someone like Hummels to just sit on maybe Firmino, you know, playing a similar role for Liverpool, drifting into space, you know, creating lots of chances. If you want to go man for man there, that could be quite interesting, that battle.
Lawrence, give me a score prediction.
I think this one will end 2-1 to Dortmund.
Okay, Dave?
I'm going to go 3-0 Dortmund.
Ooh, I'm going to go 3-1 to Dortmund. I think it's beyond Liverpool, unfortunately, but we shall see. We shall see. Guys, that wraps up the Champions League reaction, the UEFA Europa League preview, I should say. There's been some really interesting news this week we haven't got round to. Maybe we'll get round to it in the Saturday podcast, Q&A podcast. Allegations of doping in football this week. You know, the UEFA offices being raided by police following the Panama Papers. We've got the whole US women's national team pay dispute going on.
Yeah, and we've just skipped all that for all the stuff the white guys have done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In many ways. But I think what I'm saying, Lawrence, is I hope we can get into that on Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got to talk about Champions League. We all had a great time watching it. Europa League, big game coming up. But maybe Saturday, we can talk about these issues, these interesting issues. For now, though, we've got Tancredi Palmieri on this week's podcast, the Beat in Sport correspondent, Italian journalist and broadcaster, to talk about Antonio Conte, of course, who was earlier this week appointed, confirmed as Chelsea manager. We spoke to him to see whether he believes Conte is the right man for Chelsea. So joining me and Dave right now is Tancredi Palmieri, beIN Sports correspondent from Milan. Tancredi, thank you very much for joining us.
Buongiorno, guys.
So we are here, of course, to talk about Antonio Conte, who earlier this week was confirmed as the next Chelsea manager. Of course, Tancredi, a man with a reputation for success, 3 Serie A titles at Juventus, as well as 2 Italian Super Cups. What are your thoughts on Chelsea appointing Conte?
Yeah, for a second I thought you said that I was a man of recognized success. Yeah, yeah.
Of course, that as well.
That's Antonio Conte. He got a 100% converting rate on Serie A, because when he's taking a club from the beginning of the season, because he was in Serie A with Atalanta, but he took the club in the middle of the season, and he's a manager that needs to be there working on his team since the beginning of summer. And well, as you can hear today, all the papers are on Antonio Conte. It's a huge opening page for Gazzetta dello Sport. Is called Conte of London. This is the guy that Chelsea need to establish consistency along the season. There is only one thing that is working against Conte, that is taking one and a half, I would say. The biggest one is that he's taking the job in the same year when Guardiola is taking the job at Manchester City, and probably Mourinho is taking the job at Manchester United. So his excellence might not be enough. But the other half issue is the level of language he will be able to speak, because Antonio Conte is absolutely a master of tactics, but he's completely a trainer of minds and of men. So he needs to communicate at his best with players. Otherwise, it could be like some cases, for example, Prandelli, that it's hard for him to go outside Italy because he's someone that needs to communicate with his players, although if they are two different kind of managers. But still, the language is a barrier for him. I'm thinking also about Marcello Lippi. Many times was linked to Premier League, but he never moved abroad, and for that reason. So, yeah.
Another interesting issue surrounding this appointment, Tancredi, is the sort of the match-fixing trial that's going on. There's some accusations that Conte knew about match-fixing earlier in his career. Can you explain to us a little bit about that and what the potential outcome of that will be?
Okay, obviously I'm not a judge and I can't give a sentence. But let's recap in a few seconds. But first of all, Conte was already on a sports level, because what you are mentioning now is normal trial, what is in court, in normal court. So, and that is a trial for sports fraud, which is a crime in Italy. Mm-hmm. Outside of sport, is a proper crime. So Conte was already suspended in football for 3 months, 2 or 3 years ago. So long. So easily 3 years ago, he was suspended for 3 months, and he was in charge of Juventus, but he couldn't be there officially, so he couldn't sit on the bench. Mm-hmm. He couldn't speak in press or in anything, and also he wasn't there on the bench when Juventus was playing in UEFA fixtures. But he was found already guilty for failing to report. This is a different kind of trial, and for sporting fraud, as I said. And there is also a new witnessing that is adding to what we knew before with this. And it is about another player that witnessed that he was there when the things were mentioned, and that he was made aware of it, even if he wasn't part of it in organizing it. He was aware of it. So I would say that there are many things pointing in that direction. Then, anyway, it's one thing is the sports trial, another thing is the normal trial.
Okay, interesting. It remains to be seen then the consequences from that one.
But see, the consequences in sports, I don't know. I think you're I think in sports that wouldn't be. I think the consequences would be that he could be sentenced to jail for 6 months. But wait. But when the sentence to jail is under 3 years, if I'm not mistaken, 5 or 3 years, depends on the kind of crime you commit, that is just converted in a kind of fine or something like that. So you don't really go to jail. You are sentenced to that, but you convert the fine to another thing.
Okay. So we'll put that aside for a second then. You sort of said there that you think Conte is the right man for Chelsea. We've sort of seen he's got a reputation for being a sort of no-nonsense manager. He's been described as the Italian Mourinho over here. We've even seen some questions about whether he's the right man in the British press, looking at the fact that, you know, Mourinho so spectacularly fell out with his squad at Chelsea, who imploded at the start of the season. We've seen some questions over here whether he's the right man. In Italy, he's known as the hammer, apparently.
Well, he's a hammer. He's probably a hammer even more than Mourinho, because Mourinho is anyway establishing an empathy with his players that Conte is not establishing, but is getting them to the edge of what they can give to the cause. So if you speak with players of Mourinho, just scrap off this last year at Chelsea, scrap off the last year at Real Madrid. If you speak with the group that he had, always it's like you are speaking with a wild bunch of soldiers and their sergeant that were parachuted in Vietnam to free some soldiers, some kind of special,
unit, yeah.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, they speak about each other like someone, like you don't hear commonly in football. It's not like that about Conte. They still are very committed. What Conte is able to create is get the best possible commitment from the players, but there is not this camaraderie between the two parts like with the Mourinho. So there are some points of similarity, but we're actually talking about two things that are different. What it is similar is the, I can say really, the 100% focusing that you get from both Mourinho and Conte, and the preparation of the game and everything. This though is different. In fact, as what is becomes similar is that after a couple of years, after 3 years maybe the maximum, the relationship between Conte and the players is getting a bit weird, because it does get asking too much, you know?
Yeah, this
reminds me a lot what I heard from the group that were trained by Van Gaal. I heard that a lot from Barcelona, from Bayern Munich. Like after 2 years, 2-3 years, people are fed up with the Van Gaal. And Conte maybe is doing that even more. He's not giving up. Like, he's really... Conte, if he wants the target, he just doesn't care. He's going straight to the point. He's able... I will tell you this. So he was completely focused on this episode... on getting the record for Juventus at the third year he was there. Record of points. The title was already won since a while, since something like 2 or 3 weeks. So there were like only 2 games missing to the end. So the players had accomplished absolutely to their task. Everything was perfect and fine. So they were playing the game before, it was the second last game, and it was against Cagliari, already relegated. Now imagine how could be the attitude of a group, of a team that won the title already since 3 weeks, so many points, playing against at home against a relegated team. And he was doing this video lesson about the opponents to his players, that you can imagine what their attitude could be. So all in a sudden, Gigi Buffon walks in the room, he's the captain, and interrupt the lesson, say, sorry, mister, but we should speak. I have to speak with the guys about the prize, the fee we're going to get from the club for winning the Scudetto. Okay, you know, it's like, usually it's the captain that is taking a shot of this thing. It's not something like to die for, no? Well, Conte gets completely mad.
Loses it.
And, man with Buffon. With Buffon, it's like he's standing and say, "You are an idiot. You are, sorry for saying that. You are a fucking idiot." And of all these people here, you are the most idiot. I could expect this from everybody, but not from you. He takes the DVD he has with him, he throws it to the wall, and he storms out of the. So this is Antonio Conte.
That's it, isn't it? Doing that to a player who's deemed untouchable. It's like a psychological, very smart psychological thing for a manager, as you say, to get the most out of their squad when, you know, maybe they're getting complacent. I think that's a good illustration of how intense he maybe is as a manager. You sort of talk there about how he's different from Mourinho in many ways. Tactically as well, he's quite different from Mourinho. Obviously, the 3-5-2 formation at Juventus brought him great success at the club. How do you think he's going to change the way Chelsea play?
Well, Mourinho is... the prophet of the 4-2-3-1, when that is possible for him. Conte was a prophet of 4-4-2, that many remained 4-2-4 because his two wingers were extremely offensive. What happened is that he changed later to the 3-5-2 when at Juventus, during the summer camp, he had two new signings in midfield, Pirlo and Vidal. And he wasn't aware of the level of Vidal, and along the summer camp realized how good he was. He had already Marquisio that was in the starting 11. So he said, okay, I have this three. This doesn't make any sense to rotate. My point is I have to play the best and I have to adapt myself to the best. Mm. That is a huge, in my opinion, indicator of great of being master of tacticians, because he realized that he had to change what to believe for to make the best for the Juventus. There he went for the 3-5-2, and there the 3-5-2 won the first scudetto that won for himself, even later on when he replaced Marquisio with Pogba. So I would say that it depends from the kind of squad he's having and the kind of signings he will be able to get. But in principles, he would go for 4-4-2 or 3-5-2. Probably he has already won more with 3-5-2 to probably prefer even that to the first lineup he was choosing. But to be honest, Chelsea got a very fluid situation. Willian, Fabregas, Hazard, players that can play in different positions for that. And so I wouldn't be sure with what Mourinho will go.
Tancredi, you mentioned there that he changed to this system in a summer camp after, you know, seeing that he had three central midfielders of real quality. Do you feel it was more than that in a way, where a lot of teams were playing a narrow 4-4-2 diamond in Serie A at the point, and obviously playing a 3-5-2 completely counters that formation? Do you think it was a combination of him stumbling on it, but kind of then sticking with it and realizing that this really works against a narrow diamond?
No. I think it was his decision. He stumbled on the Vidal signing. The Vidal signing was coming from Juventus, not from him. Also, he was chosen by Juventus, but he didn't really have still the status to be the one arriving at Juventus saying, "I want this and that." Obviously, the club is speaking with the manager about the signing they are doing, but he was arriving from being promoted twice, not from winning three Italian titles, so it's different. He stumbled on Vidal, and he was smart enough to understand, okay, I have to change for the good of the team.
We've seen some suggestions over here that he might employ a 3-4-3, and that he wants to bring, Juan Cuadrado back to the club. He's obviously out alone at Juventus at the moment.
Okay, Cuadrado is not starting, but whenever he started or whenever he came from the bench, actually he was one of the most efficient in the game. Personally, I think that he should start, but probably Allegri doesn't want to give too much offensive attitude to you. Just wants to keep things under control. That is reasonable anyway. But what you should know about Cuadrado is that he was probably the point of breaking with Juventus, between Juventus and Conte. Because when Conte left Juventus 4 days after the beginning of the summer camp, this is another issue of him. Sometimes he's too stubborn with what is believed. That happened. I covered him since the beginning of his career when he was at Bari, and his good relationships always ended because of something like that, because of a stubbornness that would have needed only a bit more of patience and would have been solved. And that was with Juventus. He got impatient because he saw that they were not doing the signings he wanted. He was pretty burned by the European failure he had. He suffered the year earlier because, honestly, Juventus was eliminated in the semi-final of Europa League by Benfica when the final was at the Juventus Stadium. Was kicked out by Galatasaray in the group stage, and he dared to say that the fault wasn't of him, was of the financial situation. He said, well, what's the point to arrive to semi-final, to quarter, if anyway we are not going to win, which was a bit unacceptable. And also dare to say, okay, we can't think to sit in a 100 euros restaurant with 10 euros in the pocket, which is a bit a slap in the face for the owners, and the owners aren't whatever owners, it's just the richest family in Italy, you know. Cuadrado was the breaking point, as I said, because he wanted, since one season, Cuadrado was costing a bit because it was approximately 28 million of euros, something like that, 25, something like that. There wasn't a good relationship between Juventus and Fiorentina. He lost patience and he gave up and he resigned from Juventus. And now he got the chance to have Cuadrado at Chelsea. So honestly, I would be pretty surprised that he would leave Cuadrado go. Also because he's the kind of winger that actually he never had since being promoted with Bari, since he was playing the 4-4-2, mutating into the 4-2-4. At Juventus, he doesn't really have a winger like that. So maybe that could help to play again the 4-4-2 at Chelsea, for example. Or, as he's doing with Italy, 3-4-3.
Another player that's been linked in the past week or so is Leonardo Bonucci, Tancredi. This is a player that Dave believes is massively underrated. Obviously, the Juventus defender. Do you think he'd be a good fit?
For the system, yes. As quality of defender, absolutely, because there aren't at the moment so many centre-backs in the world reliable, and he's absolutely one of the top 10, maybe even top 5, but surely one of the top 10, and there aren't so many around. My issue, my problem, is that these kind of players sometimes need a bit to adjust when they move from Serie A to Premier League. That is the only thing. And anyway, he got an English style in defending, in marking, because he's very physical. I know that in England, defending is more physical than tactical, while in Italy is 100% tactical. But I would say that among the kind of Italian defenders, probably is the most English one.
The final player that he continually is linked with, that apparently is his number one transfer target for the summer, is Romelu Lukaku, obviously doing amazing things over here with Everton in the Premier League this season. Someone that apparently Conte tried to sign for Juventus a couple of seasons ago. So this one kind of adds up, even if the fee may be massive.
Yeah, Lukaku, to be honest, he wasn't really someone that Conte said, okay, Lukaku or die. He was a possibility. Also because 2 years ago he had a pretty solid forward pack with Tevez and so on. So it wasn't really the priority. It was one option for Juventus, for which Juventus was in talks. I think it could be an option for Chelsea account as well, for contest of Chelsea as well. But to be honest, I think it's very fluid the situation with centre forward and with forwards. So I will stand by. I don't know if only Lukaku will be the target, or if that will be the primary target, because the priority. Because the things are fluid. I mean, and I don't know, Higuain, so many names and might move. It's the first time. I hope for Conte will be ambitious, you know? Because when you are at Chelsea, the ambition has no limits. It's like, maybe in the end you won't be the one cashing out the most, but ambition, Chelsea got the good thing of belonging to that six clubs that got no limits when they want to spend something. So I hope for Conte that he will be ambitious.
It's definitely going to be a very interesting summer, I think. The reports over here are that, you know, Costa is determined to leave the club. Obviously, the squad needs some to be revitalised, really, and they need to sell a number of players in order to get those replacements in. You know, John Terry is kind of one of the pillars of Chelsea's early success. It looks like he's going to leave the club this season and next season in the Premier League. We're going to have so many top-class managers. Conte for one, Klopp, Pochettino are already over here, Pep Guardiola's coming, and maybe even Mourinho is going to be among those managers. It looks like he might join Manchester United, could go up against Conte, which would be an interesting matchup, won't it?
Yeah, yeah, as I said, it's to me, with all the due respect to Pochettino, but I think that it should go... I mean, I thought he's doing his best, but he should go to get the league this season, because next one, Conte, Guardiola, Mourinho, and I would add also Klopp with Liverpool, with Klopp having a solid summer to do signings, maybe not at the level of the others, but I hope that the board at Liverpool will give him at least a 90 million euros budget. I mean, think about what are the possibilities for Liverpool. I don't want to change topic what we are talking about here, but think what is the budget of Liverpool. Think how much the house needs to be refurbished compared to the others. Think about the status of a manager they hired. I mean, if they don't give him a budget for signing this summer of that level, they are doing everything wrong.
We sort of talked about over here that Conte, the Chelsea, one of the worst kept secrets in football. Mourinho to Manchester United is another one that seems, everyone knows it's happening, but it hasn't been confirmed yet. Have you heard anything about this news and whether it's actually happening or not? Is there any confirmation yet?
Well, from what are my sources, 2 months ago, he reached an agreement with Manchester United. So it's like, it's another worst kept secrets in football.
Yeah.
And things aren't still, haven't been released yet, only because they are still assessing things about his whole salary. Okay. This is one thing I have to tell you. I've been struggling a lot to find out exactly what his salary is. Because, and if I've been doing that for some time and I still didn't get the information, is because then things aren't completely decided about that topic. And also because they don't want to take to harm the race of Manchester United for the Champions League, because in the end, this could harm, this could take establishing to Van Gaal, because many things are going to change for United if they don't qualify. You might reply, okay, so why City did that? Well, good question. Probably because that was linked to other things that were in the same mechanism. So Ancelotti accepting for Bayern, Ancelotti not going to City, in fact, but actually it wasn't that. Guardiola has always been the first target, Ancelotti not going to United more than the other. So that move was linked to Bayern Munich and to another manager. This one is on his own, so this is allowing to keep the secret more than that in that case.
Finally, Tancredi, then, what are your expectations for Chelsea next season? Conte will be expected to at least secure qualification for the Champions League. I mean, do you think he will be able to finish in the top four with all these top-class managers and all this competition in the league?
Yes, I say yes in the top four. I say that it starts with a normal target, with the acceptable target of the third place. And that is what he has to achieve, to say, okay, you did your job. No, you did a good job. You did the job you were expected for. Mm. Under that, he underachieves. Over that depends also from the signing and the transfers he will have. But yeah, I would say that in the starting grid, at the moment, he starts on the third place.
Fascinating stuff, Tancredi. Thank you very much for joining us. If the good people, if the listeners want to find more of your work, where should they go?
Everywhere. I'm bragging around. No. Well, Twitter, it's at Tancredi Palmieri, my account, or if it depends on where they listen from. If they are in the States, they can see me, unfortunately for them, almost daily on Bein Sports, or they can read me on Who Scored, or see the blog that I'm there. If they don't find me, I will find them.
There you go, Tancredi Palmieri will find you. Tancredi, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for you. Grazie, guys. Bye.
Well, there you have it. Fascinating stuff from Tancredi. Palmieri believes Conte is going to be a massive success at Chelsea. He reckons they're going to get straight back into the Champions League qualification spaces next season. Also, a little interesting stuff there about Mourinho. Apparently, it's a done deal. Another one of the worst kept secrets in football. But anyway, that wraps up this week's front three. Yeah.
Exactly.
Thank you very much for listening. We are going to be back on Saturday, hopefully talking some of those issues I mentioned before. I look forward to it. I hope you look forward to it too. Lawrence, it's been a pleasure as always chatting to you on a Wednesday night. If the good people want to follow you on Twitter, where can they go?
Ooh, S-Q-U-A W-K-A. Is that right? Yeah, I guess
yes.
So. D-A-V-E. Yeah. Find me there.
Squawker Dave. And Squawker Dave, where can they find you?
We'll go into Twitter and you put in A-D-A-M-B-O-U-L-T. And then just put wood at the end, right? And you're sweet.
Wood.
That's what she said. Right.
If you
wow!
Lovely. And if you want to find me, go at LOZCAST. I tweet often, regularly, and incredibly insightful and amusing.
That is very kind. That was very kind of you to talk about yourself in such a way, Adam.
Yes. Wow. Funny that. Definitely keep an eye on the Football Public this week. We've got an exclusive interview going up. Squawker Dave himself, interviewing Rio Ferdinand to find out the 10 things you never knew about Rio. Give us a nugget, Dave. What are one of those nuggets?
Is Nando's order goes in there. What he learned from ballet, you know, loads of great shit like that.
Yeah.
Wow. Loads of great shit.
Loads of great shit.
If you want to see loads of great shit, watch the Football Public this week for that. Until Saturday, though, have a bloody amazing week. I hope you have the best Thursday and Friday of your entire lives.
Well, that's a good one. Oh, I like that. That's good, Adam. Well done.
Yeah. Make sure you have...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Some banter.
Yeah, thanks, Dave's mum.
Not so much. Bye.